Hey, good afternoon, Central Texas. Tom McNew again here, coming to you live from the. Actually, we're recording this at the close of the men's conference here in 2025. Hard to believe it's already 2025, but I have the pleasures of sitting down with Mr. Kevin Wells, who has an interesting background in sports writing, writing in particular, but sports writing really kind of is where you got your acclaim. And we'll talk all about that as we get into it here. And I did not realize, I have to little spoiler here, that you were the same Kevin Wells who wrote one of my new favorite books, The Priest That Saved, that we need to save the world. Save the church, excuse me. We'll talk about that too, because I love that book. Anyway, Kevin, thanks for joining us on the Hometown Hero.
Tom, it's a pleasure. It's an honor to be on the show.
I appreciate it. And so give our 2.2 million listeners a little bit of introduction to yourself.
Well, I'm a married father of three. Live in outside of Annapolis, Maryland. As you mentioned, Tom, I sort of cut my teeth on as a journalist, as a sports writer. I did that for 10 years and sort of achieved my goal, or I guess even dream. I became a baseball writer. I covered the Tampa Bay Rays. I was actually the first ever beat writer after it became an expansion team in 98. I'm from a big Catholic family, and we all the boys played baseball. There were six of us, so we all loved baseball. And when I realized that my untalented butt wasn't going to be able to play professionally, I said, you know what do I do? So I said, oh, I like to write. So it was, I married writing, which I loved, with baseball, which I loved, mm-hmm. and the fact that I was actually getting paid to travel the country and cover Major League Baseball. I'm like, why are they giving me money?
That's a bonus.
Yeah, what's going on here? But after that, my wife and I met my wife, Krista, in Florida. I was in Maryland. I moved down to Florida for my work. We moved back to Maryland. We started a family there. Mm-hmm. And then because of really some problems in the church, scandals, I love the church, yeah. I began to write. And that's led to a lot of articles and books. And I never write about so much the scandals and the pain, but I try to write about the things that are curatives, you know, mm-hmm. sacred heirlooms that can sort of help us during the tough times. So I spent a lot of time writing books and, you know, just trying to do what God would have me do as mm-hmm. far as putting words on paper.
What was the decision, or was there a singular decision that, where you left the baseball writing world to move into, I'm using air quotes, the church writing world? Or was it just kind of something that just evolved?
It's a great question. I think what happened was when I moved home to Maryland and stopped journalism altogether, because you can't be married and be a beat writer who travels around. Yeah. It's a terrible way to treat your wife. So I got into the family business, which was masonry contracting. We've been around for 60 years.
Oh, wow.
Grandfather founded it back in the 50s, and I needed to build a bank account for my future family on that, and also I needed more money because my wife and I weren't blessed to be able to have children, so mm-hmm. it was all going to come through adoption, and so life really took off. I actually began to really like being the vice president for a mm-hmm. pretty you know, successful, because we've been around forever, and company, and but then the church in D.C. really, there were some things revealed about McCarrick. Yeah. And my uncle, Monsignor Thomas Wells, my dad's brother, he was murdered in his rectory in the year 2000. And I found out that there was some nefarious things that went on in that rectory prior to my uncle's arrival from priests. Mm. And if I can be frank, my uncle was sent there by Cardinal James Hickey to rout out a homosexual priest problem in that rectory, four previous priests. And a year and a half later, after my uncle arrived, he was murdered. So we know that Satan is a deceiver, but it also mm-hmm. says in Scripture that he's a murderer. And I believe my uncle was murdered by that sin in Satan somehow. Mm-hmm. It was a chocolate mess got tangled up. So that's when I really began to say, what's going on? You know, what's going mm-hmm. on in this bleeding out church? And then a year or so later, the Boston priest scandals happened. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? And then, of course, McCarrick. And that's when, as you mentioned, with the priest, we need to save the church. I asked my brothers. I said, hey, guys, I worked with three of my brothers and my dad in this contracting company. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, would you mind if I take a sabbatical? And they don't even know what a sabbatical means. I said, don't worry. You don't need to pay me. So I did. I took a sabbatical, and I began to write about the paragons, mm-hmm. John Vianney, Bosco, Neri, Damon the Leper, John Paul, all the great precincts, and this was after the scandals, and it was sort of a proposal of, hey, we're pleading for holy priests. We can't have any more McCarricks. We can't have any more hidden sin. We can't. We're begging you as the laity for holiness from behind the ambo, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the book came out, like, I guess it was providential at the right time, and became like really an instant bestseller. Not because of the knucklehead writing the book, but because I think of timing, but also because the Holy Spirit gave me some. You know, I love the priesthood, and now it's in seminaries all over the world. I spoke to
it's
like,
it's a little bold, though, to
and
dare I say presumptuous,
yes,
for a layman to say, hey, priest, father, I know better than you.
Tom, you don't know how many priests saw that a sports writer wrote this book and he said, I'm not touching that thing. so like the guy's arrogant, right? I don't blame him for thinking that, but it wasn't that. It was the book was simply a plea. It was like, father, I please show me a holy priesthood. And here's what the paragons did down the ages. So you got the blueprint. But Tom, I'll tell you, although many priests and bishops said, I'm not touching that thing, many other priests and bishops reached out to me. And Tom, here's what they said. And it's a glorious thing.
Yeah.
They said this. They said, hey, I saw your book. I didn't want to read your book. But something said, you know what, pick the thing up. So I read it, and thank you, because you humiliated me. What you proposed, what you showed, what you revealed reminded me of the priest I wanted to be 20 years ago when I left seminary, and I took my foot off the pedal, and I became comfortable, and I became like a bachelor priest. Yeah, I became a bachelor priest, and you grabbed me by the face mask and reoriented me to the burden of my identity to go after souls. So thank you. Because I'm never going back. So Tom, how wonderful is it for me to hear that? I mean, more than a few dozen. And here's why. I'll say it's one reason. Here's why. Because that priest who was living, as admittedly he would say, like a bachelor, and looking more at himself rather than the flock in front of him, when he went back that Sunday, after reading it, if I'm to believe him, and I do because he's a priest, he's not going to lie, he'd say, hey, parishioners, I owe you an apology. I even care for your soul. And from now on, that's changing. So buckle in, because I'm now going to preach the unbridled truth of the Catholic faith, and I'm not taking shortcuts.
I'm going to be the shepherd that you need, that Christ demands of me as the priest. And I think it's great. And I wasn't kidding. I read that book, and I don't remember where I got it. But I've had it for several years, and I read it, and I've read it a couple times actually, and it blows me away to read, and I wish I'd have known that you were going to be here, because there's some passages in there I would have loved to have break down on me. But anyway, it really kind of blew me away that there would be. And I know that there is, but that anyone would push back at what you were saying, because it wasn't that you were, at least in my opinion, that you were saying, do this, do this, do this, do this. But as you kind of alluded to, there's a blueprint. If we look at what the church fathers have done, if we look at what the great saints have done and the great priests throughout history, all we got to do is go back to that.
I was Tom, just a few minutes ago, I'm up on the altar and behind the ambo, and I'm talking about John Vianney to the men today.
Yeah.
And John Vianney took a little village so the French Revolution guillotined hundreds or thousands of priests and faithful laity, and the whole country, forget about ours, the whole country had stopped practicing the sacraments for many reasons. One, because a lot of priests back then signed what was called the Oath to Robespierre. And that was like, I will be a fake priest. I will talk about Mother France before the Mother of God. I will talk about social things rather than sacramental things. So they signed the oath away. So what happens? Of course, France gets bored. So they stop going to mass, sacraments. And also other French people that still loved the church and wanted to attend mass, they were afraid of the guillotine. So France was a stinking mess. And John Vianney said, Lord, this little parish in ours, it will not be able to handle the number of people who will journey here to see this town. And within 15 years, tens of thousands of people were visiting ours to lay their eyes on this uncommon priest who could read their soul. And he heard 12 to 14 hours of confession every single day.
Wow.
Why? So why? Why did all this happen? Why did he save hundreds of thousands of souls? Because he was a priest who poured himself out. Mm-hmm. And that was all he was doing with the priest. We need to save the church. I'm like, hey, look, it's the same thing for me as a father. Like, if I'm not pouring myself out the best I can for my kids, then shame on me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, my wife shouldn't respect me. My kids shouldn't respect me. I mean, and I don't blame them. So the burden of the identity for a priest is from the beginning of time, since Melchizedek anyway, is mm-hmm. I am a sacrifice. That's what the priesthood is. It's a sacrificial offering. So priests are to suffer to save souls. I mean, if you're not going to suffer as a priest, then you know what? You got an issue. I mean, you just have an issue. It's because as a father of my home, I got to suffer. I'm the domestic priest of the home.
Yeah.
And if my kids see me scrolling on my cell phone or, you know, eating Fritos all day long or whatever, or mistreating their mom, then shame on me. And I don't want to be around dad. Dad, that's not a dad.
Yeah.
Dad's a loser. Dad's a bachelor. So that's all it is. It's just the linear symmetry. If I'm going to suffer, well, you know, a priest should probably want to suffer for souls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to back up a little bit. Now, your first book that you talked about that I was looking at on your website there is kind of a, well, not kind of, it is. It's a miracle story, and it's called Burst. That was your first book? Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought. But talk us through. Well, just kind of describe the miracle story, if you don't mind sharing that piece of it.
Sure. So the name of the book is Burst, A Story of God's Grace When Life Falls Apart. And it's this. When I was around 40 years old, I felt that I was living not as a Catholic man should. I don't think I was stuck in any mortal sin, but I was too slothful,
mm-hmm.
too prideful. And I'm like, you know, God, I'm sick of this, you know. So flatten me. Like, I want you to make it violent because, God, you sent your son into the world to endure violence, and he redeemed all of humanity through violence. So maybe it works the same way for me. So flatten me. And he did.
This sounds like one of those careful what you wish for.
I knew, hey, Tom, I knew it was coming. I knew the other shoe was going to drop when I asked for that one. And I also knew my parents had raised me to know that God answers that prayer 100% of the time. So a month later, almost to the exact ticking seconds, I was flattened. I had a brain aneurysm. And should have died. I had what's called an arteriovenous malformation, where a tangle of blood vessels just mm-hmm. burst. Rushed me to the hospital, and nothing was working. About 5 or 6 days in, they didn't want to give me invasive brain surgery because the malformation was pretty deep in the brain. But finally, they're like, "He's going to die if we don't, because the blood is drowning his brain." So the surgery failed too. They were in there for, my wife says, 7 or 8 hours, and they pulled out and they said, they told my wife, if we go any further, he's going to die. So this was the day for me to die. And Krista, my wife, called up the healing priest, Father Jim Stack, who was my Uncle Monsignor Wells' best friend. He was the one who was murdered in his rectory in 2000. They're best friends. And she said, "Hey, Father Stack, I heard you started healing ministry. Is that right?" "Oh, yeah, Krista, yeah, like a year and a half ago, yeah." "I need you to come to Baltimore because Kevin's dying." "What?" "Yeah." So he came up to Baltimore about a little over an hour later, and he brought his assistant with him in the ministry. And if they were on this radio show right now and they had the mic instead of me, they would tell you this. I was incapacitated because of the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
They came in, and Father Stack knelt down on my bedside. I was in neuro ICU room. That's the floor where people go to die in mm-hmm. at the hospital in Baltimore. And he said, hey Kevin, we've been praying to the saints. We just finished praying the rosary in the Divine Chapel on the way here, and we know that saints can intercede now. Is there a saint that we can have pray for you now?" And he said that, I said, with my eyes closed, "Bring Tommy down. Bring my uncle, Monsignor Wells, down. Monsignor Thomas Wells, his best friend." And he was, you know, flabbergasted because I was incapacitated. And he stood up like a V8 moment and then slapped his head and said, "Of course." And he went to the foot of the bed. And what he said happened, and what his assistant said happened, is this dark room, the entire temperature changed. And lights began to pop. And his assistant almost fainted and grabbed the bed to stay upright. And Father Stack said, yeah, I knew I was standing in front of the midst in the midst of something supernatural, but I knew it was a miracle when I sensed, sort of in a horseshoe formation, a part of the heavenly court around your bed, and standing next to me was your uncle Tommy, his best friend, and because he said Tommy, when he prayed, he said, "Tommy, save Kevin's life. If you don't, he dies. Ask Jesus to save his life," and he did. The next day, they stuck me in a CT scan, and everything was gone: the blood, the fluids, the malformation, and I was healed. So after that, everything changed.
I have goosebumps, and the hair on the back of my neck is standing up. That I don't even know how to just to respond to that. It's absolutely incredible. Now, did your uncle passed before this had happened, right?
So he passed in 2000. This was 2009.
Okay. And Father Jim and your uncle had been lifelong friends, or just seminary and friends?
Best friends for probably 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Wow. What an incredible story. And so then fast forward a couple of years, you survived, and you get this, you're working with your brothers, and you get this idea to write this recipe, dare I say, for the church and for our priests. And so that ties then, I think, into where your new book leads. It's entitled The Hermit, The Priest Who Saved a Soul, a Marriage, and a Family. And so I want to give you just a couple minutes or a few minutes here to talk about this, because I picked it up just out of curiosity when I realized you were that Kevin Wells. No. And just reading the inside flap, I was like, this is an incredible story.
It's raw.
Yeah.
It's raw. It's briefly for your listener, so after my brain surgery, I got back and everything changed. You know, I wanted to do God's will alone. And so I did all the things that a Catholic man does who knows he's been saved. So, you know, more daily masses, more rosaries, more sacrificial love offering, all those things. And my wife, it opened up my wife a mother wound of shame. She wasn't really raised the way she should have by her mom. God bless her mom, but that's just the way it was. And so Krista felt shame when she saw me sort of growing, I guess. She said, "I can't go there. I don't know how to go there." So she began to secretly binge drink red wine to kill the shame. It got worse and worse and worse. And all of a sudden, my marriage was in the dark night, and it was awful. And especially bad when you have children. And
now, how old are your kids at this point?
Well, they're young, so they didn't. So at that point when it started, I think there were 8, yeah, 6, and just a baby.
Okay.
So this nightmare, this dark night, lasted for about 7 years, and it was during really COVID-19, 2020, where this. So I'm from a family of priests. My brother's a priest. I know I have a lot of priest friends from throughout the country. And this priest, Father Martin Flume, rather than shutting down at COVID, he opened wide open because he knew there was people like my wife, Krista. And at that point, Krista was healing through daily adoration, through daily mass, through weekly confessions, really intensive spiritual direction. She was no longer drinking. She had a fall here and there, but she was healing in front of the monstrance. And he knew when the moratorium came that Krista could fall into disrepair, and he said, "I'm going nowhere." So masses continued, everything continued, and that's the year Krista was healed, in the early fall of 2020. And in 2021,
Father Flew must have faced a tremendous amount of pressure, socially and hierarchically, shall we say, for his decision.
He is very, very intelligent. He's wise, so he knew workarounds. He's brilliant. So if you go to Washington D.C. and you ask about Father Martin Flume, they'll say, "Oh, he's just brilliant," but he's also holy.
Yeah.
So he knew the burden of his identity. He's a shepherd of souls. He didn't care about getting a sickness. He didn't care. But what he also saw what happened in 2020 with BLM, the riots, Antifa. And he knew that something had come in because of the moratorium, choruses of demons. Something happened. So in 21, he felt Mary call him. He had given his priesthood to Mary 25 years earlier, and Mary called him to say, "Martin, you must disappear now and give up the rest of your life as an expiation for the suffering church. Too much evil is here now. We see it. You saw it live in concert. Tens of millions of Catholics left the church after COVID. So you become a hermit and you give up the rest of your life to save souls. So the rest of your life will be penances, mortifications, and prayer." And so now today he's a consecrated hermit in a cell no bigger than your childhood bedroom, where he's turned over the rest of his life for you and me and for all these other souls in America and the church, and a recovery of holy priesthoods. Mm. So he's given his life over to Mary to help us out.
You know, it's interesting because I saw a report, and forgive me for not remembering the source off the top of my head, where this report was saying that we collectively, the royal we, have gotten back to pre-pandemic levels of church attendance, and it's taken us almost 5 years now to return to that level. So it's interesting that kind of points to the power of the prayers of one single person to overcome tremendous, tremendous obstacles.
He's just doing his part. He's just obliging Mary. You know, everyone plays a part to some extent. And it's funny, Tom, as I've traveled the country, some dioceses are brought back to pretty much pre-pandemic, mm-hmm. but others are not there.
Yeah.
And Tom, I think it's time for candor in American Catholicism. A lot of that is dependent on who the bishop is. So if the bishop is a spiritual father who wants to coach up his priests, like Newt Rockne,
mm-hmm.
like Notre Dame football players, or Lombardi with the Packers in 68. Well, they're back. But if the bishop isn't quite the spiritual father that these priests hunger for, then they're still struggling to get back. So it depends on where you are.
Sure, sure. Pockets of Renaissance, of good and bad. Yeah, yeah. So we got just a few minutes left here, kind of without spoiling necessarily, but what was kind of the message you were bringing to the men here in Central Texas?
Well, I was asked today to come down from Maryland to talk about the virtue of fortitude. So that's I based my talk around that. But it was really, I think it's the, I really believe this. I'm not just saying this. I believe it's the greatest virtue, greatest is a cardinal virtue, the greatest virtue for the Catholic man today, the Christian man today. Why is it? Because we all want to be superheroes. We all want to be Gladiator and Top Gun, and we all want to be William Wallace, and that's just who we are. We're men. We're stupid that way. We just want to be heroes. But also, we also want to be like a martyr.
Yeah.
And fortitude is the virtue of the martyrs. So why? Because martyrs said, "Kill me. I will not deny Jesus Christ. Kill me, take off my head, crucify me upside down, do whatever you want. But I will walk the end of the line to proclaim Christ." So today, in today's world, February 15th, whatever we're in, 2025, we have great disorder in this world. We know it. We know it. We saw it the last 4 years. We see it today. We're just everywhere. So a man who has fortitude, and it's a gift from God. You know, we're always trying to increase our virtues, but a man who has fortitude, he's unafraid to the point of death to take it on. So he overcomes his fear, like, oh, it's an ideologue that's going to get in my face. He's like, oh, no, it's okay. I'm just going to go forward because Christ's truth, his gospel must be known. So it's a man who just steps into things, mm-hmm. regardless of the cost, because God asked him to.
Mm-hmm.
That's fortitude.
That's awesome, and I enjoyed listening to your talk here, and I hope that it resonated with all of the men, the several hundred men that were listening to you today here. I'm going to ask you one little quick question here before we go, but I want to give you a chance to let everybody know what you're going on. But just kind of looking through your website and you're traveling as much as a baseball team. It appears, but that's got to be a little bit a little taxing on the family and your wife. And how do you maintain that connection with them?
It's a great question. So, February is a weird month. February is always really busy. But here's a good answer to that. So I'm flying into Louisiana tomorrow, and my wife and daughter are flying in too.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah, so I'm going to meet them And so because my daughter's a junior in high school, so she's looking at colleges. Oh. So I get to spend time taking my daughter to different LSU and different colleges. Just to, and my wife will be with me too. And because this book, The Hermit, is really the story of Krista and I, Krista and I will be up there together.
That's
so
wonderful.
For the first time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we, so, but yeah, I try not to travel too much because I'm more of a writer than a speaker. Like I don't consider myself like a speaker. I'm a guy who's always written. Like I don't care so much if I speak. I'm just trying to write as much as I can. So I spent a lot of time at the house just sitting in my office trying to pick something out that people might read.
Well, I tell you what, if this book is anything like the priest we need to save the church, it will be well received, and I have enjoyed it. How can folks find out more about you?
Well, so the first I want to say this, Tom, the book The Hermit that Ignatius just released. So a father's not supposed to have a favorite child, but I've written 5 books. This is my favorite book. It just is. For a lot of reasons, but it was hard to write.
Yeah,
because
sure.
It gets into some ugly things, and I had to kind of stick it out and write it. I'd encourage your listener to check out The Hermit. But for any other information, go to kevinwells.org, kevinwells.org, or don'tgiveupthefight.org. Yeah. And also, I have another book coming out in April called The Coach by the Cure. So, Coach by John Vianney. Yeah, and it's on the website.
Okay. So don'tgiveupthefight.org or kevinwells.org will get you to the same place. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you carving some time out here and appreciate you coming out here to Central Texas and gracing us with your pleasure.
The pleasure is mine. No, pleasure is mine. Thanks so much for having me on the show, and I've done nothing but enjoy myself down here.
All right. God bless you.
Thank you, Tom.
Good luck.
All right, we'll see you.
Bet.